How about the distributions, the quarterly distributions that you make to your investors, to your fund? Do you pay them every quarter, or do you keep that in the fund as well? Are you using any other vehicle to compound those?
So that's a good question. So normally what we do is after 6 months, we evaluate if it's good, we start distributing some money out of the fund until we acquire the third property. And then afterwards, when we have ready to feel like we're ready to exit, then we start determining the time and the market and start identifying. Well, a few months to identify another property, see if we can get that lined up. So within 6 months, we start looking at other properties and see if we can do the staggering approach to maximize the exponential growth.
Welcome to the Real Estate Vibe Show, where we empower you to take control of your financial life. Are you ready to discover how to make your money work for you, but don't know where to start? Well, you've come to the right place. Join your host, Vinky Lumba, as she interviews highly successful industry professionals who will share their life experiences and mindset that played a pivotal role in their success. Learn how to build generational wealth through commercial real estate investing. By the way, it's important to note that this show is strictly for educational purposes and should not be considered legal, accounting, or investment advice. Please stay tuned as we have a free gift for you at the end. If you enjoyed the show, please don't forget to give us good ratings and leave a comment below.
This is the Real Estate Vibe Show, and I'm your host, Vinky Lumba. As a real estate investor and a fund manager, I'm always excited to explore the world of real estate opportunities with you and for you. And today, a special episode with a special guest, Jonathan Wee. Jonathan is my good friend for the last 4 or 5 years. We worked on one deal together as well. He's a former tax professional who, after 2 decades in corporate America, pursued his passion in real estate, beginning in residential real estate in 2003. Jonathan's journey led him to commercial real estate in 2018 with the founding of Greystone Capital Group, which focuses on multifamily and self-storage facilities. He's a real estate expert with a huge portfolio and a host of Building Wealth Through Commercial Real Estate podcast. Welcome, Jonathan, to the Real Estate Vibe Show.
Thank you very much, Vinky. I'm very happy on your show.
I'm very excited to have you on my show as well. And today we have a very, very interesting topic, the power of funds, why they are the smartest investment choice. But in today's world, everybody's looking to go into a fund structure because that's more appealing over the real estate syndications. Because we all know funds offer unbeatable diversification, liquidity, and ease of management. And these are all the key ingredients for a robust investment strategy. So let's explore how all these advantages can streamline our and your investment journey and potentially lead to the greater financial growth. With that being said, Jonathan, I'm going to ask you a very simple question to get started with. Can you share by explaining what exactly a fund investment is and how is it differed from other investment options like real estate syndications?
Yes, great. That's a great question. The basic difference is that in a syndication, basically, there's a GP and an LP in a syndication, and you acquire a normally commercial property, larger property, because you do a syndication. Whereas in a fund, the fund manager will create a fund, and this fund has fund objectives. And the objective is to, in a diversified pool of assets that you select as a fund manager. So let's say maybe self-storage, a multifamily, a hotel. And in that fund, you invest in that fund, which is diversified into different markets and different asset classes, which gives you more diversification and safety from risk. Whereas you just go one syndication, it's just one deal, one location. So it's a little more riskier if that one goes south, your investment is tied to that one deal. And also in the fund, there's several unique advantages that I like to also distinguish is that you get the diversification, you get one single K-1, one single tax reporting, or one single legal document. So instead of signing like 10 deals or 3-4 deals, you can have only one within the fund. So it's easier and more cost efficient for legal and tax purposes. And another big advantage, because I was tax professional CPA for many years, is something called tax staggering, which Tom Wheelwright talks about. Whereas in a fund, and this is why I created a fund, is that we can basically buy an asset. Let's say we sell it in 2 years, value add it, or develop it and sell it in 2 years. I could buy a larger property and cost seg it and offset the gain from the first property into the second property through cost segregation, depreciation staggering within the fund. So you have no income tax liability within the fund. So that's cost tax staggering. Whereas if you buy a single asset, you start to recapture 1245 depreciation recapture, which is like basically if you take it all in year one and the useful life is year five, but you sell it in year two or three, there's a recapture penalty that you gotta recapture back the portion that's not fully depreciated and pay a tax rate on that portion that goes into the calculation of your sale. So you have recapture on the depreciation before the useful life of the sale. So those are three main reasons I say that for a fund, it's for investor who wants the diversification, who wants these kind of advantages, will look to a fund versus a single asset syndication.
Thank you for sharing that. So let's dig a little bit deeper in all these three points that you have mentioned. So let's start with tax staggering. That's what you mentioned, the cost seg or the deposition that we use in the traditional syndication model. So how that differs in the fund management structure?
So typically in a syndication, you can do a cost segregation. In year one, it accelerates all those assets into year one. So you get a bonus, in essence, a bonus depreciation is what George Bush used to call it under bonus depreciation rules. And then so it gives you a massive tax loss so you can offset any gains you sold. But however, it's in a fund, within that fund itself, you can cost seg each asset you buy. So if you buy in year one, and let's say you build to rent, and in year two, you sell it and you buy a bigger property. And you do a cost seg on a larger property, that loss, the massive loss, will offset your gain. If you keep doing it for one sector, 2 years, 2 years, 2 years, so 5 year period, and you delay gratification, you can effectively, 5x your return because you delay gratification. You push the X to a multiple exponential model, and you can ultimately within like 10 years, do it for 10 years, you can retire. So 10 years to retirement is one of the models I have seen using this depreciation staggering concept.
So when we're talking about this, let's talk about the recapture and 1031. So how does that 1031 or the recapture play a role in the similar scenario and also the 10-year example that you're saying that you have created for your investors? So what does the whole picture look like if you take this tax staggering structure with the 1031 or the recapture? And what would it look like, end-to-end picture, if you can walk us through that?
Okay. I think your question is walk us through the fund structure, the staggering inside the fund?
Exactly.
Okay. So technically, okay, in the fund, the way it works, and I spoke to many lawyers, I spoke to my lawyer and numerous other lawyers, I spent a lot of legal fees on this. And basically, in the fund, it's frowned upon to do a 1031. What I mean 1031 means you buy it and like kind of exchange a different one. In a certain time period, you could buy and exchange it. He said, that's a no-no. So what you got to do in a fund is you have to actually sell it, find another property. So if you're a developer, and let's say you're in the Arizona area, you have a relationship with the mayor and your partner's the biggest developer in town. So they have a contract to buy land. They buy land ahead of time, like kind of like our local supermarket, HEB, they buy it ahead of time. So then you have a staggering amount. So you know that plot one is here, plot two is here, and all laid out. So you build it based on your timeline. Then you sell it, and then you have this land right to build another one. So build the older also. Then you have. Then when you sell this one, you build this one, and you can offset those tangible assets to pay no taxes in the fund, but exponentially grow your 100K. And you do it for 10 years, it'd be 10x. So 10x to retirement is what was developed for one fund model that I've seen. And he's a very successful Silicon Valley tech who raised $100 million. And he called the Zen properties, and he's doing very well with that. So that's a big concept that you could take massive benefit in inside the fund, which you cannot do in a single asset, because in a single asset, you build to rent, you sell it, but there's gain, and you have to pay tax on the gain, right, on that asset. So, and you have recapture on the asset by itself. Now, the only way to go around is you buy another massive property outside of that and have a lot of losses to offset that, but you need to buy also a lot outside that, but if you only you can. So it's also a matter of timing that you can't buy a larger asset to offset those gains. If you can't do that, then you're stuck with a decent sized bill because of recapture.
So you're doing it within the fund, that 1031 and the recapture. You're basically, you're not paying out your investors. Let's say property A, you got it for the timeline of 5 years. And let's say if you decided to exit year three, Then at the same time, you have already lined up another property or bigger property with a larger value. And then you're bringing all those investors to the new one is kind of a 1031 for you because you're exiting this one at the same time you're entering the new property.
Yes. Yes.
So have you written in your PPM or the deal disclosure, how does that work? Like, is it say that they're going to be, there's going to be 1031 exchange, you're going to be moving from one property to another property and so on?
Yeah, we have my lawyer who's doing funds for like 30 years. He drafted the language just saying that we have the right and the ability to, as a fund manager, to make the decision markets, best time to sell and execute. Based on my wisdom and knowledge and experience, we can make you more profitability than what we conservatively say. We say 1.8 to 2, but we probably could do more than that based on my records.
Mm. So let me ask you this. So how about the distributions, the quarterly distributions that you make to your investors, to your fund? Do you pay them every quarter or do you keep that in the fund as well? Or are you using any other vehicle to compound those?
So that's a good question. So normally what we do is after 6 months, we evaluate if it's good, we start distributing some money out of the funds. Mm-hmm. Until we acquire the third property. And then afterwards, when we have ready to feel like we're ready to exit, then we start determining the time and the market and start identifying. Well, a few months to identify another property, see if we can get that lined up. So within 6 months, we start looking at other properties and see if we can do the staggering approach to maximize the exponential growth so that my investor, you know, can potentially get 4x in like the 5-year fund of my fund, basically.
But they do have a choice. If they wanted to exit, they can exit at that time. They can take all that and they just like, you know, all the tax burden and with also the losses, the paper losses that they're getting and all that.
Yeah. So like, you know, let's say, for example, if it makes sense to just sell it, we're selling and get that gain. But yeah, so yeah.
And the other thing that you mentioned, well, that was point number two that you said earlier, that in the fund, there is no income tax in the fund. So can you shed some light on that? What do you mean by that? Or how do you get away with
it? Yeah, so how we get it was that is that that tax staggering that Tom Wheelwright talks about, basically basically when you sell the asset, let's say you gain 100K, but you buy a larger asset, do cost seg, that loss will be massive to offset that 100K gain. So ultimately you have no tax inside the fund. So when you get the K-1, it'll be like, because it's only one consolidated K-1, it'll be like almost like nothing, you know, and you have deferred losses and you defer them until you get more, you know, and that's how, unless you're a real estate professional and you take it that same year. Like you have to work with me, we could take the same year because we're professionals. But if you're not, you're a doctor, you're a lawyer, you defer your gain until the sale, basically.
So basically, it's a tax deferment strategy over the course of period. So you're not avoiding taxes, but you're just delaying your taxes. Just wanted to highlight that. So let me ask you about your journey. You know, you are a fund manager now, multiple assets under your belt. You started as a CPA. So if you can take a couple of minutes and walk us through your journey, how did you end up in real estate, and especially as a fund manager, you know, or why it was so intriguing for you?
Great. Thank you. I was born in a war-torn country in Vietnam, you know, toward the end of Vietnam. And I was a baby and didn't know anything. And then what I knew was effectively we had to leave the country because political reasons, it was in turmoil, communists took over. So we fled the country and we were able to became immigrants with nothing. Came to New York City and I saw the Statue of Liberty and we lived in the suburb of New Jersey. I worked really hard. You know, I was doing newspapers. You know, you had to do it. And I had to do all those minimum wage jobs. And then I got a career in accounting because I didn't know what to do. I asked my brother, I said, what should I do? I had no idea when I was in my 20s. I was kind of lost and confused. And I didn't even know what a CPA was. I didn't even know what a lawyer was. You know, when you're young, you don't know because you have no experience in the real world. Mm-hmm. Besides doing an internship. But even that is only a small taste of reality. So my brother just could do accounting. I said, okay. So I went in accounting. Then I got my CPA because that's the normal route when you do accounting, you get CPA. Then I got my master in taxation because I want to focus on tax and not auditing and everything else. Then I get to Big Four PricewaterhouseCoopers and I learned public accounting, which is really not fun if you ever done public accounting. And then I got into Wall Street. I worked really hard, became the number one guy in Wall Street, became an executive and I reported to CFO. We were managing like billions of dollars in assets and I was commanding like thousands of people. educating them and becoming the forefront of the guy who preaches the policies and do like webinars and stuff like that. So after that, I realized something very important that people should understand your audience. It's not about the money or success. And I was trying to make, I think what happened was my mom said, be a doctor, be a lawyer, be someone like very established like that. And I was like, a CPA, a doctor, a lawyer, the big three, right? And what I realized, I'm living in my mom's dream, but not my dream. I was miserable. And I said, you know what? You have to follow your heart and passion, whatever it is. And I bought some condos in New Jersey as a side gig to make some income during the housing craze back then when it was low interest rates and almost nothing down or something like that. And then, but I couldn't leave my job. I was so tied to my desk. I was a wage slave. I realized I was golden handcuffs. I was tied to my desk. I had to work like 60 hours, 70 hours a week, you know, like Deutsche Bank, one of these, you know, Wall Street firms, which is not fun. So I decided to quit my job. I was kind of like my midlife crisis. Me and my wife wasn't happy. We quit our jobs. We had no income. We had a young child with no medical, nothing. I went to my, I called my brother. I need your help. I need to crash on your couch for maybe a month or so. So I moved from New Jersey to Plano, Texas, in Dallas. I lived for free with my brother for like a month or so. I had no idea. Like, you know, I was like midlife crisis. Like, what's going on here? Like, what's supposed to do? Then I said, you know what? I'm gonna go all in this guy. And I saw this this guy Michael Blanc on something about multifamily. I'm like, what was this? This guy like another Carlton Sheets, no run down and then, you know, take your money and run away like a scam. And I looked at more. I got his underwriting detail. I'm an Excel nerd. I'm like, oh, I like this thing. Then he goes, you come to my program. I'll mentor you. I'm like, wait a minute. Is this some kind of scam? My wife's very skeptical. Like, don't get scammed. Don't do it. You know, take your money and you get nothing. And I'm like, man. Then I said, you know what? I said, I'm going to give him a chance. Even if I lose whatever money I gave him, I'm going to take a chance. And I took a chance on him and actually it was something legitimate. And I learned what syndication is. I learned how to buy multifamily. He taught you how to raise capital. And that's how I started my journey in 2018. I formed Greystone. And now I have 2,000 something units. I sold 4 deals. I have like 14 deals in total, and 10 I was a lead sponsor, and I did different roles as, you know, as a raising capital or LP or a capital raiser. So I'm in all different roles. So I'm KP, key principal, balance sheet guarantor, to mentor, to lead sponsor, to every roles you can name up, I've probably done it. Asset management and everything else.
Congratulations for a successful journey. So let me ask you this. How was your first raise?
My first raise. Okay, that's a very good question. I think people understand that my first raise, I was scared like most people. It was my first deal in the Michael Blanc program. I found a off-market deal from Mr. Patel. He was an Indian owner, a 56 unit, and it was a very low basis, like 33,000 a door, and had to raise 750K. I was nervous because I had 750K, and I did my first time raising capital. I only went to my friends, my family, and I got probably half of it. And then I met someone at Dealmaker Live, Michael Blanc's event, and she agreed to, we had like dinner that night, and she agreed to raise the other half, and she got her family's money, and we were able to close the deal on that first raise. So I was nerve-wracking. That was scary, but I got it through. So
what has transpired since then on the capital raise side? Because I know you still raise capital for your deals. You like to do that. You're very hands-on. And knowing our relationship for the last so many years, I've been seeing that, you know, how ethical you are and like very, very strategic about certain things. So I know you're also launching your mentorship program about capital raising. So wanted to learn from you what has transpired since then. You know, you were scared in your first raise, and look at you now, 4 years down the road, you know, trying to teach people how to raise capital. So if you share that journey with us.
I think from being nerve-wracking the first time, I think what happened was I gained confidence because I was leading a deal, I was buying the deals, I could speak the numbers, I could prove the numbers were conservative enough, and that any reasonable person look at it would say yes, that's a reasonable standard. And I think that people just trust what I say because I was the former Wall Street tax executive, I was CPA, so I had more credibility than just an average person, right? I'm almost like a lawyer. I passed my law exam. So I think I had more credibility in that sense. And people knew that I was a CPA, I could do underwriting. My numbers of financial protection was sound. And so they invested with me. And then over time, I had strategic partnerships who want to help me raise capital. And I also do a lot of networking. And the key is networking. And the key is also joining, you know, masterminds that you can get communities that you So the keyword does maximize, you have to fit and align with the people who you choose to believe. So I like Michael Blanc. He's a great guy. He's inspiration, financial freedom. So I kind of align with those values, so I align with his tribe. So I say find your tribe and stick and go with the tribes, because sometimes it may not be right for you, but you got to find the right one that's your home. And once you're home, then you can, these people are like-minded, they'll support you. They will give you any guidance you need to succeed, basically.
So how did you get into the fund management from real estate syndications? What was the pivoting point for you?
Right. So fund management was hot, I think, like 1 or 2 years ago when I saw people doing fund management, capital raising. It was a hot new thing all of a sudden, the new toy in the block. And I debated with Michael Blanc, and I talked to Joe Fairless and his team. I talked to many established who are ahead of me. So Michael, Joe, someone like Jeff Greenberg, a fund manager, Avestor has a platform, Badri. So I talked to many people in Raise Masters, which I was part of, and other people in the industry to find out the fund model. And in the fund model, there's different kind of fund. There's a customizable fund and there's a traditional fund. So I debated, I did like research, and I realized I need to do a fund if I really want to scale my business to new heights. Because single asset is fine, but it's also that chicken and egg where you have to land a helicopter just right to raise the money in a certain time period. So when you do a large deal, there's a risk that you can't raise $20 million in like, you know, 1 month or some 2 months. So the fund model will alleviate that issue by raising it when you identify the deal in a traditional blind fund. So it's a trust more on the operator than the deal itself, even though you like the deal. So you have the capital front to actually go and acquire these deals. And that's why it was attractive to me. Because if you want to buy a $30 million asset, a $20 million asset, and a couple of them in like one year or so, you got to have the ability to have to quickly execute the funds in a fast manner so that you're more competitive in the offering bids. You look more credible in that sense, and you can be a good operator in that sense within the fund. So that the fund model attractive for me as an operator, because I have the capital readily up front so I can acquire these assets I need to execute my vision and plan.
Interesting. And you mentioned something called customizable funds. So how customizable fund is different than the blind pool fund that you're already running?
Right. So customizable fund is a relatively new concept. It's basically different because the investor can put very little amount in. So based on the fund manager criteria, it could be $5,000 or $1,000, which is not normal. It's $50,000 when you're resting the deal. And they can pick and choose like any bucket. Like it could be your fund could be like debt fund, equity fund, hotel fund, anything. You could pick and choose, kind of like stocks. And that's called customizable fund. There's pros and cons of everything. So it just depends on investors' taste and appetite. I'd rather you invest more, so you get more of the equity and more deal, and you get more returns in the deals that are really good deals. But everyone has their own choice. So
Interesting. So in the customizable fund, it's more like you just get the investors in, just like similar to the blind pool fund, and you get them sign up and then get their interest level. And in the blind pool, they could be part of any deal that you're bringing into the pool. By default, but in the customizable size, they can pick and choose what deal they wanted to participate in. And then you can call the capital when the deal is ready in the fund. Is that the correct statement?
The fund manager decides on the mechanism, if they want to call the capital with 10% deposit and call the 9%. It's up to the fund manager. Each one does it differently. So if you give you credit fund, you want to do no deposit, it's up to you, 100% call, or you want to do whatever ratio you want, it's up to you at the end of the day.
That's true. Because some fund managers, they do not like to be the bank, so they don't want it to go the route of paying the interest. Because if you're holding on to people's money, you want it to pay them some interest. And then some funds, they don't want it to operate as a banking kind of services and, getting the interest accrued or getting the interest paid, because you have to find the high yield accounts to place the money. So you're getting that kind of interest back to pay your investors. So instead, some people, they just like to get the stock mills, put them in the fund. And then when the deal is ready, they can do the capital call as well. I have seen that scenario as well. Actually, I follow that scenario myself. That's the reason I want to bring it up and kind of learn from you, from your perspective, since you're a CPA and you've been doing it for a long time.
Yeah, so I asked the people who've done it before me, my lawyers who've done it 30 years, and he sees basically, the two camps. There's some camps that do the deposit, but most people ask all at once. So when I say that is by tranches. So let's say I find a deal in Dallas and identify it, then tranche one, maybe raise for this deal, just tranche. I find another point, do another tranche, and then I'm done. Because my two tranches will equal that $20 million. My first tranche, $10 million and $10 million. And you so can do that
that's
way.
That's a better approach. I think that's a better approach.
It's a better approach. That's why I'm trying to do that. And I'm going to identify the show. Here's a real asset that you can look at the underwriting and see it and touch it. Then you like me, you can invest in the fund. It'd be similar assets like this, right? Mm-hmm. So that's how we're doing it.
So one last question before we move on to our rapid fire. I'm looking for some advice for our new investors. If someone is new and starting to look to start in the multifamily investing or the self-storage investing, what advice would you offer in this current market for these investors? A fund model or go into the syndication? Because I know there is a lot of fear in the market. And investor sentiment is so different. It's not the same like we have seen in the past years or pre-COVID. So what would you advise to the investors, what they should be looking for, how the due diligence has changed, or what are the red flags, or what could give them a green light to move ahead?
Well, I would tell my investors out there that first, just know their operator. Look at the deal, review it, and also look at the track record and know who you're working with. Look at the stuff and see if it meets your criteria. And then what you have to say is you have to buy when people are fearful. That's like Warren Buffett, because right now is the best golden age to buy multifamily. People don't realize it, but right now is the best time because you don't have this opportunity too many periods. So right now we're looking at multifamily because there's an opportunity because in 2-3 years ago, they did this bridge debt. They did these very aggressive, bridge loans to make it pencil in. And now because of the black swan event of the federal interest rate increase, no one foresaw that. So it's like no sort of COVID. So we had two black swan events. We had COVID-19. So collection was very difficult. Integrated rental assistance. That's a big first black swan. And after that was the Federal Reserve interest, not a black swan, which no one predicted. And that hurted the whole industry as a whole, from storage to multifamily to houses, because the interest rate rise so fast, so quickly, that in the history of our lifetime, we've never seen that. For me and you, we've never seen a consecutive 11 increase so rapidly that it caused operators to go in distress, because if your bridge loan is no longer is adjustable rate, then you have a big issue, right? 11 times, you will not survive that 11 times. Coupled with increase in tax and insurance, you will not survive that. You have three triple whammies there. That's why they go into these kind of situations. So that's why it's a big black swan. And when you have an event like that, there's opportunity on the other side for buyers who are sellers who are not in that situation, who can get a discount to acquire these assets. And then the markets will turn back around in a few years. And that's where you can basically effectively exit it. So as long as you buy it right, you can exit down the road. And that's why I think it's a good opportunity. So investors should not, I know that you're afraid, you're scared, but you got to think this way. Strategically, if you can get a deal for a good price, good basis, and operators has experience, he can execute a vision, then you have good returns for you.
Share one golden nugget with my audience. It could be on mindset.
Mindset. Yeah, I love that question because I'm very spiritual in a way, and I love mindset. So the most important thing in life, and not just in real estate, you have to love yourself, self-love, be happy. I'll recommend you meditate every day for 20 minutes. Just sit down, relax, take a deep, do breathing techniques. Go like this, go right. That like breathing techniques. Play some meditation music on your phone. And then I want you to reconnect to yourself, because it's in yourself, in your soul, your subconscious, your soul, where you tap into the universal energy. And the universal energy effectively will manifest out into the 3D world that we live in. Will help you propel your growth through positive vibe and thinking. And you can be successful, you're very successful. And every successful person has some kind of ritual. I have mine called the Miracle Morning, which is basically walking, working out 1 hour, eat a healthy breakfast, and meditating every day for 20 minutes, and projecting that I'll be 10x in 5 years, my future self, Jonathan, I'll be doing this, I have this many assets, and I'll be helping people. The key is also helping people. Spend time with your family, your loved ones, and help people grow, mentor them, give them opportunity to breathe and grow so they can effectively be agent of light, of the angels, right? Of the guardians that can help spread love, life, and laughter in everyone. And that's the most important nugget I'll share with your audience.
Thank you for that. I really love that. And it's like my core, I would say, because it's just like finding out who you are. And it's very important. And once you find out who you are, the growth is exponential, because you are not just this physical body that you see, and your consciousness, your awareness go way beyond that. It's just like tapping into some internal intelligence. Even though things are not going your way the way you think initially, it's okay. Just, you know, take a step back, slow down to speed up. That's what my thing is. If I don't understand something, it didn't work out, it's okay. That's how we learn. Make mistakes. But that should not hinder your growth, basically. You know, you just learn from that and move on. So this brings us to our rapid fire round. I'm going to ask you 5 questions. You're going to answer in one word or one sentence only. Are you ready?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. So first question is, what is one of the most important things that you have learned in your life, and how did your life change after learning it?
I learned that you have to basically in life communicate to my investors situations that's going well and not going well, and just be honest, because what happens is they know that it's ups and downs in real estate and in life, and you just gotta let them know the truth in your newsletter to say, listen, this month we have some vacancies and, you know, they moved out, maybe it's slow season or something, and then you say, we'll try to in the summertime come back up, and we're doing these advertising, doing all these things to try to, you know, catch the wave. So you have to explain to them, you know, just truthfully that, hey, this isn't right now, it's not doing that great, but we're trying to get it to a point where it'll be back to normalcy or something, you know. So just be transparent, communicate, and just make sure they're aware and make sure they understand that situation.
Share one good book that you like and recommend to my audience.
The book that changed my life was Rich Dad Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki. So I think that's a good book. If you're new to real estate, just read that.
In one word, what does life mean to you?
In one word, journey, basically. Experience.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
That's a good one. What is your biggest passion?
My biggest passion is to give back to others and love life to the fullest and give back to others, because the world needs it. I see a lot of things that we have to help change humanity as a whole. So we increase the positive vibration so that we can reach to a next level, next dimension.
If you could turn back in time and talk to your younger self, what would you tell yourself and why?
I would have told myself I should have started real estate earlier. And I would have hired a mentor earlier, and I would have joined masterminds earlier to accelerate my growth. And if I would have known that when I was younger, my 20s, I would have done so. I just didn't know that. And it wasn't too many available at the time either.
So how can people reach out to you, Jonathan?
They could do two ways. They can send me an email, jonathan@graystonecapgroup.com, or go to my website and there's a contact information, graystonecapgroup.com.
Thank you, Jonathan. I really enjoyed chatting with you today.
Thank you very much, Vinky.
Thank you for listening to our podcast today. We hope you found this episode valuable and informative. As promised, we have a free ebook gift for you. Claim your free copy now at www.lumbainvest.com. We believe that this resource will provide you with even more insights and knowledge to help you achieve your financial goals. Don't forget to join us next week for another informative episode with another awesome guest. See you then.